The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, cold morning in Israel today. Lots of rain, snow falling in the Hermon and in the Tzfat area. Snow has been forecast for all areas above 750 meters this morning, and even some flurries, snow flurries in Jerusalem today. So quite a cold day. We're told that school as usual in the north, in the Golan and in Tzfat, where the snow has already started to fall. But certainly a chilly and very wet day in Israel today. So that's how everybody's feeling. Everybody's cuddled up close with warm clothing on. Real wintry weather today.
Oh, absolutely wonderful, though. Let's talk about some of the topics. Why has releasing the deal of the century now become a big priority? It kind of went quiet for a while, the Trump deal of
it
the century.
It went very quiet,
and
yeah.
Then it's back.
It's very much back on the agenda, and we've heard Trump focusing on the past few days, over the past few days, on the idea of releasing this. And there are a few things in the mix here. Obviously, the Israeli election coming up very soon, and while Trump says that he doesn't really want releasing this deal of the century detail to necessarily get embroiled in the election, by releasing it now, it almost certainly does get embroiled in the Israeli election. And there is speculation that it may support somehow Prime Minister Netanyahu's campaign to be re-elected. And I'm not sure whether Trump is kind of trying to somehow to bolster Netanyahu or not. But certainly releasing it now, as we are within 2 months of the next round of the current elections, may well influence that. So I'm not sure if that's on the agenda in terms of what President Trump is trying to do. But I do think that having been in office for more than 3 years and he himself heading towards potential impeachment and, of course, the general election in general, the presidential election later this year, I just wondered to what extent Trump was saying, look, this was one of the things that I promised to do when I first took office almost 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, whenever it was, 3 years ago. And I want to at least release details of it before we go to the next round of presidential elections. So I can say I achieved what I set out to achieve, which was to present this deal. And of course, it was very, very lots of fanfare around what the deal was going to be, the deal of the century. So I just wonder whether he's saying, look, I promised to do it and I'm going to do it. Yeah, I'm going to do it whatever happens. And I have the impression that that might well be an influencing factor. We do know that the Davos, the World Economic Forum is taking place this week in Switzerland, and Jared Kushner will be there. And there are rumors that he wanted to talk about the deal of the century as he wanders around Davos meeting all of those leaders who will be present at that particular event. And of course, later this week, we've got the Holocaust Forum meeting, which also he will attend, and I'm sure that he will use that opportunity to somehow promote the details of this deal, which we don't really know what they are. I mean, there have been a lot of rumors about keeping Jerusalem united under Israeli rule as it currently is, but somehow allocating some part of Jerusalem to a future Palestinian state as a potential capital. Those are some of the things that I've seen. But overall, the Palestinians are particularly unenthusiastic about the prospect of this being released. And it's not immediately clear why this week it suddenly becomes such a priority.
Yeah, interesting. I have no doubt that we'll find out why. It'll become apparent as it evolves. The Shin Bet has claimed that 560 attacks against Israelis were prevented in 2019. Were any further details given?
Well, there were some details given. This little piece of information was released at an event that was held to reward the best people within the Shin Bet. They have a kind of a prize-giving ceremony each year. Prime Minister Netanyahu was in attendance, and of course, the Shin Bet chief Nadav Argaman was presiding over the events, and he was the one, as well as Prime Minister Netanyahu, who mentioned the fact that these 560 significant terrorist attacks in 2019 were prevented. And the split that was given was also quite interesting. Apparently something like 280 of those attacks that were prevented would have been shooting, were planned shootings. 100, more than 100, were car rammings and knifings. 76 of them apparently involved some kind of explosive. 7 were planned kidnappings, and 6 would be suicide bombers. That's the way that the numbers are broken down. So they know exactly what these people were going to do, and I'm guessing that the way that these attacks were prevented was not just simply saying, oh, we've run into some guy who looks a little suspicious, let's arrest him. I think that there's much more about intelligence information and arresting people as what they're called ticking time bombs before they actually manage to get up and carry out whatever attack they were planning to carry out. So this is an interesting piece of information because, you know, we very seldom get to hear about the successes in terms of things that are prevented. We always, unfortunately, get to hear about the guys that got away and the attacks that that they do succeed in carrying out. But we very seldom get to understand how effective our security services are at preventing these attacks.
What's interesting, so, Anthony, is that when you hear a number, 560, whatever that would be, it's just a number. But when it gets broken down into kidnappings, rammings, car rammings, knifing, it makes it much more real, and you realize just what a mammoth task this has been.
I mean, let's put it into context. This is more than one attack every single day of the year. I mean, that's kind of the way that this breaks down. You know, 1.5 attacks, if that's what you want to say, on an average day. So this means, you know, the Shin Bet obviously are keeping very, very busy. And of course, the Shin Bet, as opposed to the Mossad, because the Shin Bet is really the organization that's responsible for internal security within Israel and is also responsible for keeping track of things that might be coming out of the West Bank. That was also under the Shin Bet's responsibility, as opposed to the Mossad, who are operating outside of Israel's borders. And my understanding is that the Mossad is actually responsible for the reconnaissance work that's going on in Gaza as well. So this is just what the Shin Bet have been doing. They're set aside for a moment all the work that the Mossad have done. So I think it's significant, and I think it is sometimes appropriate to stand back for a moment and just to marvel at the amazing work that these guys are doing to keep us safe in our homes.
Brian is asking, good morning, Howard, please can you ask Anthony his opinion about a report over the weekend that the IDF is not ready for a war on the Northern Front. They mentioned a brigade that would go into battle first. I think he says 319, if his memory serves.
There was indeed a report about that, and the government auditing office has the responsibility to go and look around and make sure that everything is as it should be. And in fact, they released this report saying that the IDF is not ready to go into battle in that particular area. And I personally take some of these reports with a little bit of a pinch of salt, and, you know, talking particularly to Brian's question, because I'm not always sure whether what's being released is some sort of form of propaganda, and whose ears these reports really are intended for. We have to remember that when things go out to the public, they're either intended for the ears of the Israeli general public, of the man in the street in Israel, to try somehow to influence the way that they think and behave. And many times they're also intended for the ears of our enemies, because obviously they are monitoring our press on a daily basis to try to understand what's going on internally. And so I wasn't really sure how to interpret that comment as to whether this was potentially something that was a message that the IDF were trying to send out just to try and send some sort of a message to our enemies. But certainly the IDF ombudsman, who is Major General Yitzhak Brick, who was very, very critical of the decision-making process of the IDF General Staff at one point, and he was certainly concerned about the preparedness of the IDF. And of course, we had a few little incidents going on aside from that particular assessment. We had that incident where those planes were flooded in that base in the south due to the rains, and a lot of criticism about the damage that was done to those fighting aircraft and how that could certainly be avoided. So there are certainly flaws within the way that the IDF is operating, but I think it would be a slight exaggeration to say that they're completely unprepared for any war that might break out on the north. I mean, you know, we know that they're operating constantly on the northern border as they are in the south, and it would be very, very surprising for me if they were wholly unprepared for any events that might happen in that area.
Finally, there are rumors that President Putin will release Naama Issachar during his visit to Israel. It's everywhere right now. I'm seeing it on JTA. It just worries me that that this is almost happened but hasn't happened yet. It is in the press. What is going on?
Well, I'm not really sure what to make of it. I mean, certainly we know that Prime Minister Netanyahu has appealed on more than one occasion to President Putin. President Putin, of course, will be here in Israel later this week for the Holocaust Forum meeting on Thursday. And there was some hope that he may even arrive with Naama together, bring her home. You know, such was the level of expectation and hope that, you know, this is all kind of a done deal. I'm not so sure that it's such a done deal in the way that it's being presented, because as we know with the Russians, there's always a quid pro quo involved. There's nothing for free. And we do know that the Russian government did want to have that Russian individual sent back to Russia who Israel had arrested, and that the U.S. government had then applied for extradition because this was a person who apparently had been involved in some cyber crimes, and in fact the US government was claiming that he might even have been representing the Russian government trying to somehow influence elections in the United States. So this was a pretty serious charge, and it seems as if though the Russians had it in their interest for this guy to be back in Russia, the Americans of course wanted to try him in the US, and under the extradition treaty between the US and Israel, he was actually sent back to the US, and this was very disappointing to the Russians, who had hoped that he would be exchanged for Naama. That was the deal. At least that was the way that the deal was presented in the public air, in the public domain, as far as we understood. So now the question is, if Naama is indeed going to be released, what is the price that the Israeli government is going to be expected to pay for that? And it certainly, as I said, I don't think that it's going to be just a freebie that she will be released. I think that she is being held for a particular reason to try and use her as some sort of a negotiating tool, as a pawn, if you like, in this chess game. And so I'm not 100% convinced that her release is just going to happen in the way that the press is suggesting, that Putin will discuss it and he will think about it, and soon after he returns back to Russia, she'll be released from jail and she'll be home. But certainly there is a lot of positive expectation in the public domain, and I hope that that's not going to be without any cause, without any basis, because that would certainly be very disappointing for everybody, seeing as the press has really set expectations very high. So we will see what happens during the visit of President Putin later this week, and whether he has anything to say about it. But certainly there are very high expectations of her release.
It does bother me as well.
Before we head off to the news, Howard, I know we've only got like 1 minute left, but I did mention this when I spoke to Kathy yesterday afternoon, something that surprised me, and that I just wanted to leave out there for you guys to think about, for those who didn't listen yesterday afternoon. There is a list that's been published of the world's most powerful countries, a list of 25 countries that I've seen. And, of course, the United States, Russia, and China are the top three countries on that list. But the thing that really surprised me was that Israel is eighth on the list, following obviously the United States, Russia, China, Germany, the United Kingdom, France, Japan, and then Israel. Israel is the eighth most powerful country in the world when it comes to politics, economics, and military strength. And I just wonder at how that could be. I mean, I think I know how it could be, but it seems wondrous to me when you consider, you know, a population of less than 9 million people and a GDP of something like $360 billion, as opposed to $5 trillion and 126 million people for Japan.
Absolutely.
Which is just
incredible.
Seventh on the list. Absolutely. So I'll just leave that out as a thought there and leave you guys to go on to news.
Amazing. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place for the Israel Report.